Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
As a personal matter, home is many things in America. The rented flat, the tent in the wilderness, the trailer home always on the move. The development of distinctly American houses is a saga that merges indigenous culture with European dreams of farms and freedom, and the planning of cities which developed in America often with very little thought on how and where people would actually live. Thomas Jefferson thought a lot about this at his residence in Monticello, Virginia. Architect Frank Lloyd Wright yearned to mix the landscape with his Falling Water House in Mill Run, Pennsylvania. Marina City in Chicago pioneered the city within a city idea and was built with funds from the janitors' union. Low-income housing has been a challenge in American urban life since the tenement days of New York's Lower East Side, and the Langston Terrace dwellings in Washington, D.C. are a novel, designed approach to housing the poor.
But the number of places that blacks could live were very limited. Those tenements, those tightly packed slums, those were not consciously designed by an architect.
As a child, I didn't know anything about designs, modern design. I just knew that it was beautiful.
Eloise Greenfield was an early resident of Langston Terrace, and her voice and others are a part of a three-part series from PBS and Chicago station WTTW that debuts tonight. 10 That Changed America, with 10 homes, 10 parks, and 10 cities selected. This evening's episode is 10 Homes That Changed America. Reid Kroloff is a former editor-in-chief of Architecture Magazine and a nationally recognized commentator in architecture and urban design.
Langston Terrace is very significant. It's one of the very, very first pieces of federally funded public housing in the U.S. and the very first in Washington, D.C. And then it's one of the most significant pieces of architecture done by an African-American architect at a time when there truly were almost none.
How did, first of all, the Langston Terrace dwellings avoid or embrace some of the mistakes that we associate with public housing, the giant centralized housing projects in Chicago, the mistakes in Detroit and New York? What makes the Langston Terrace dwellings so different, and did having an African-American architect bear on that?
I think it did bear on that. The lead architect, Hilliard Robinson, you had him practicing in Washington, D.C., building what would be the first federally funded housing project in this city. And he knew people would be looking at it as they drove by it, but also they'd be looking at it for political reasons, both positive and negative. And he wanted to make sure that people understood, A, that public housing could be a good thing, could be a beautiful thing. B, that there was a reason to bring the federal government in, which was to help change attitudes about African Americans and where they lived and how they lived, but also attitudes about whether the government can and should be involved in this kind of activity. And then finally, whether African Americans can, in fact, produce professional quality architecture, in his case, just like white people can. And he was well aware of all three of those and very intent on delivering a positive message that, yes, in fact, all of those things can be executed successfully.
How did the choices that he made as an architect portray that this was a worthy project and not some sort of dumping ground for, you know, people who were too poor to be a part of mainstream society in Washington, D.C.?
The two most important aspects of this would be, number one, the buildings are beautifully designed to create what are elegant, quiet, minimalist buildings influenced by Dutch modernism of the 1920s and 30s and by the Bauhaus of the same, almost the same period. And then secondly, beautiful master planning. The buildings are laid out on their site very intelligently to encourage community development and landscaped beautifully by an African-American landscape architect. So the quality of design and then intelligent planning and landscape really makes this project stand out. And it does look different. When you drive by it, it does not look anything like the images that you were bringing up earlier about these massive central units. They're a much smaller scale. There's plenty of open landscape. It's a very, very nice set of buildings.
I'm noticing that in the series, Marina City in Chicago is also one of these projects.
Yeah. Well, of course, it's very different than what we were discussing in Langston Terrace, but the success of Marina City and the interest in Marina City is contained within its name. It isn't the Marina Towers or Marina Point. It implies, as its architect and developer wanted it to, that it is an entire city unto itself. So there's the two apartment towers, there's the integrated parking right below them, there's an enormous performance venue, a grocery store, a gym, all of the kinds of things that you might need to make a life in the city. Now, they just happen to have an exceptional architectural expression as well. Those buildings are so iconic, and I hate that word, but they're so exceptional on the landscape.
They're even more recognizable, it seems to me, than Sears Tower and Hancock Center. When I first saw them when I went to the University of Chicago, I thought they were like, you know, a record company headquarters or something like that. You know,
Capitol
Records would be there or something.
I think part of the power of those buildings, A, is they're round, and no matter how often we see them, we still never quite get used to the notion of a round building or a cylindrical building in that case. And number two, there's two of them, John, and they're right next to each other. Every time you twin something, there's a power in that twinning. They look as if they're having a conversation. So it's like two beautiful, elegant, tall people standing there conversing.
The centralized idea of living very close to everything that you need in walking distance, that's the ethos of public planning right now in urban America. And Marina Towers seems to embody it. Is that true?
Absolutely. We've begun to recognize that we've invested a tremendous amount of money and time, effort, and our culture into the middle of cities. Well, we've made that investment. Why would you ever want to walk away from it? And then secondarily, once you start to see how much of it's there, why not go take advantage of it? It's really easy to be in the middle of a city and go to the symphony one night or a rock concert the next, or go to a play or go to a restaurant. And now I can go to Whole Foods or I can go to Trader Joe's, and they're right in the middle of town.
How does the notion of public planning and thoughtful public use of land get embodied in both of these projects in the PBS series? Because the idea of public anything has been degraded, I think, in our time. Maybe that's ending now, but it certainly was not a popular concept in the 80s and 90s.
It certainly got a bum rap because people saw example after example after example of projects where public funding was engaged that were mismanaged and allowed to get into terrible conditions, or were seen as the breeding grounds for crime. And those impressions were not wrong. But it wasn't because those places couldn't be good simply because they had public investment. It was because we misunderstood that public investment is not a one-time or upfront cost. It's something that must continue if we want to get full benefit. And it's not a hard concept to understand. You don't buy your home and then never take care of it after that. You buy your home and you pour money into it. We have, unfortunately, too much of a sense in public life that once you've made the investment, we built Langston Terrace, now let those folks take care of themselves. And that's just not how it works. Had we maintained them and kept the landscaping up and kept the buildings up, we would today be able to point to public housing projects like you can in many, many other countries where they are still desirable places to live. So it's possible.
Reid Kroloff is former editor-in-chief of Architecture Magazine and a nationally recognized commentator in architecture and urban design. Thanks so much, Reid.
Thank you, John.